listening to the Survival in Motion podcast. Learn, adapt, prepare, survive.
Hello, everyone. This is author Cal Wilson. I'd like to welcome you to another episode of the Survival in Motion podcast. On today's podcast, what I'm going to do is have an interview with survivalist author Ron Foster. And we're going to be talking about many unusual preps, and especially we're going to be going over his book that was recently released entitled Old Farts Survival Guide, which I believe is a very good prepper book. And this should be one of those paperbacks that belongs in your prepper library. It's a very good book. This book is about 500 pages, it's a big, thick book, and I don't think I'm exaggerating when I say I think every 4 or 5 pages there's another photo or drawing or diagram or something. And I think in nonfiction prepper books, that's a way you can learn the quickest, by just looking at a photo. That's why I did it with my 2 nonfiction prepper books, Dirt Cheap Valuable Prepping and also Dirt Cheap Valuable Survival Retreat, although my books are not nearly as big as his books. But in all of the books here, you're talking about a lot of photos, a lot of diagrams. I think an old fart survival guide, it's probably a good idea just to leave it on your coffee table in your living room. And you'll have family members come by and just say, hey, what's this? And they'll just thumb through it. And if you have family members you'd like to educate on this stuff, you know, you could do a whole lot worse than just looking through this book and checking out the photos and diagrams and stuff. It's a quick way to learn what's going on as far as survival issues. So this is a really good book, Old Farts Survival Guide by Ron Foster. So I would recommend that you buy the paperback and keep that as a permanent member of your prepper library. All right, so one thing I wanted to say before we get into the interview. In the interview, we discuss animal snares, and I don't want to recommend that you do something that'll get you thrown in jail. So before you do that, it's a good idea to double check. Maybe you can Google your local state, the state that you're in, and see if that's legal to use in your state. Or I know we've had a number of listeners outside the United States. If you're outside the United States, it's also probably a good idea to double check online to see if animal snare usage is legal in the country where you are. So again, just keep it legal. I'm not recommending that you do anything that'll get you thrown in jail. Of course, on the other hand, if it's a total societal collapse, then it doesn't really matter. But until that happens, I'd recommend you keep it legal and double check to see if animal snares are legal in your jurisdiction. So anyway, on to the interview. Enjoy. Okay, I'm with Ron Foster here, author of 62 books, including my most recent prepper nonfiction book entitled Old Farts Survival Guide, because I'm feeling kind of like I'm an old fart. So I could use a survival guide book. So that's why I'm adding that to my own collection. But it looks like a very good book. Anyway, welcome, Ron Foster, to the Survival in Motion podcast. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to have you on the line.
Yeah.
Appreciate the opportunity.
Before we get started, you had an event you wanted to publicize to the listeners, something in April?
Oh, yes. Thank you very much. Yeah, it's called the Come As You Are Apocalypse. It's going to be on Spectre Island in Alabama. Spectre Island is a mythical town in Alabama. It was a movie set for the movie Big Fish. A lot of people watched that. It was a big seller. And we're going to go down there. We got 9 apocalyptic authors, many well-known names, and a whole bunch of preppers. And we're going to catfish and camp and have some adult beverages and a good time.
That sounds fun.
It's going to be on April 5th, the weekend of, yeah.
Is there a website or a phone number?
It's on the Written Apocalypse. The Written Apocalypse is a group on Facebook, but they also have a web page. Bing works good. I don't know why Google's not picking it up, but the Written Apocalypse, just put in Spectre or Ron Foster, anything, you'll see it.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Tell you more about it.
Okay. And I guess I can look that up and have the details, like a phone number and a website. I'll put that in the show notes.
Okay. Great.
Well, that sounds fun. Okay. Well, thanks. Okay. Maybe you can tell us where you're coming from. What's your life history? What got you started?
Oh, well, let's see. I wrote a book in 2003, Rural Ranger, basically because I was getting older and about half of what I knew growing up, bushcraft or survival skills or whatever, most people hadn't been exposed to. I was forgetting a lot of them, so I wrote it down. And I wrote my first trilogy. It started with Prepper's Road March, and this is like 1 month after, 1 second after come out. And then I did the Solar Carrington event, taking things down. And then my way of doing things is teach you some survival while you're reading a story, because that way you remember it better with the characters. You read a dry survival book, you have a problem remembering, but you can always remember what the character did to get out of a situation. So that seemed to work for me to get my emergency preparedness message out better.
Yeah, I think that works. I've done that. There's advantages to both nonfiction and fiction, but yeah, I totally agree that in a fiction situation, you can put a protagonist or somebody in a situation where they're trying to get out and survive, and you can detail how they did it.
You know, a lot of this genre, they got some Rambo type or somebody who's really rich, got a lot of stuff. Now, the way I did that particular book, my background's emergency management, so I said, okay, I'm going up to Atlanta for a job interview, and my bug out bag's 26 miles away in the wrong direction. I got to make it back to Montgomery, Alabama, 180 miles in the wrong direction, so I just did it that way. And then I tell everybody my quote is, prepare to lose everything but your mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And be able to find what you need.
Yeah. Did you grow up as a Boy Scout, or any grandparents tell you to be careful, that kind of thing?
Well, I got the whole Boy Scout routine growing up. But, you know, my grandparents, they had a Great Depression era, so they had their ways. And it's kind of amazing how that generation grew up. Like my grandfather, he started out on a horse-drawn fire engines.
Yeah.
And then he saw a man land on the moon, and he's on his deathbed, and I was like, you know, crying. Like, he's going to cry, boy. Imagine what you're going to see in your lifetime. And I'm thinking about that, because all this new stuff that we got, like, you know, cell phones and all this, everything, you know, we all take for granted. None of this stuff existed, you know?
Yeah, I think
so. It's kind of neat. Yeah.
I was just thinking about my own grandparents. They weren't necessarily preppers. They did a lot of stuff that did not need power. But I mean, if there's one thing I can say that my grandmother instilled in me, is she was a financial prepper. And I think growing up in the Depression had a lot to do with that. You know, that you just plan on the economy melting down. And what are you going to use to survive and feed yourself, you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, a lot of people came back then, you know, still do. A lot of people were in the city. They bought some stuff, but, you know, some, like my most memorable things, and of course, like my mom, you know, she reminded me like how much they had to save to get her a prom dress or any little small thing. Or happy back then, you know, you had to take an extra job painting or something like that to get some money. I mean, really watching your pennies. There was no credit cards and all that kind of crap back then, right? I mean, you either had it or you didn't have it.
Yeah.
And you had to really plan on it.
Well, not to go too far afield, but there are some good books out there, and I can't remember the name of the author, but it's a woman historian who made the case that FDR's New Deal made it actually last longer. And this sounds weird, but the government answer to all that in the Great Depression was to tighten the money supply, or at least the Federal Reserve was trying to tighten all the money instead of getting more money out there, which is like the opposite that usually works. So yeah, the whole 30s, I've referred to that in my book, a couple of books. It must have been scary to live in the 30s, have the economy as bad as it was, and then read the newspapers about this guy named Hitler taking over in Germany, and then what's going on with Japan. That must have been a scary decade to live through.
Oh yeah, well, I mean, we got out of World War I too, but what I find most interesting is we got over 1.5 million people during the Great Depression that when they did the census are unaccounted for, we assume are dead. So there's got to be quite a story about starving, et cetera, even though, you know, we had soup lines and then people traveled. Imagine the dust bowl that was going on during that time also. With people just, you can't do anything. Your place is buried under sand, you know?
Yeah, and no whole family farms were getting foreclosed on and whole families would be thrown out of work and go to the soup lines. Yeah, I remember hearing something about World War II, that when everybody signed up, there was actually a problem with the enlistees, you know, that there was such a problem with hunger in the United States at the time that when your average person signed up for the army or whatever, that they might have had physical problems, you know, just from the hunger that they were used to.
Oh, yeah. Well, the enlisted, I've never thought about that. It's an interesting point you brought up. But I joined the military. I always laughed because I had a whole bunch of country boys with me, too. And they said, bare ass, bare pockets, you know, the bare cover will put you in the military.
Yeah.
And, you know, every time I got unemployed, I wouldn't change MOS. It's just your skill in the Army. You know, like I started out field artillery and did all that. But later on in life, I said, oh, let me go learn electronics. Let me go learn, try to get me a skill or a trade.
Yeah.
Something, you know, come in and pop out of the military. You know, that was a lifestyle down here for years. And every small town that we had down here always had a guard unit. All those are closed up pretty much now. So that's a whole bunch of stuff. In Alabama, we have more National Guard per capita at one time than any other state in the Union. If this part of the Civil War, we would have won, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, the military is great. You know, you serve your country, but you also learn skills that will help you get a job when you're out.
Yeah, but nobody wants, you know, if you're an infantryman or an artilleryman or something like that, that's not a skill that crosses over. But you learn leadership, you learn how to behave yourself and all that kind of stuff. It's a good thing to form a young man's mind and actually, you know how to punch the clock hard, I guess.
Yeah.
You could say.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, and thank you for your service. All right, so what got you writing about all this?
Like I said, my background is emergency management. They'll spend like $5 million telling everybody on the Florida Gulf Coast to prepare for a hurricane that we have happen every year, right?
Yeah.
And so their message is not getting out. And they've been trying to figure out for years how to improve that message. I'm like, okay, I was doing a job change. I've done a whole bunch of stuff in my background. But I said, all right, I can write my story and tell you some basics. And then during this time of 2012 was coming on, I don't believe in the end of the world stuff, but I do keep track of solar events, et cetera.
Yeah.
How does the average person go ready, set, go? And what I had my person walking through Atlanta with no power.
Yeah.
Get home. How do you survive? And what a common person could do just by reading my story.
Okay. And was that when you wrote about the Carrington event?
Yeah, the book was called Prepper's Road March. That was the first one. And then during that time, we had a lot of people on YouTube channels come and go. But, I mean, this back in the heyday, I had all the top YouTube channels kind of following. So we all enjoyed that book, and people learned stuff. And then the way I write things, I was, like, explaining to people, like my guys walking down the road, and we had all these women's shoes on the side of the road.
Yeah.
Because they're having to walk now. So always carry a pair of sensible shoes in there because, you know, if you got high heels or whatever, go to work, and now you're having to walk, you don't have that.
Yeah.
So just make people think outside the box a little bit, you know?
Yeah. Or outside the stiletto.
Oh, yeah.
That was a joke.
You go to work, but I mean, if you got to walk home in those days, you don't have any shoes now.
Hey, one thing I wanted to add, speaking of 2012, I think that was the summer when it was revealed maybe a month or two later that the Earth missed a coronal mass ejection by like...
Actually, it was 2 years later, my friend.
Oh, okay.
Years later. That's why I was mad about that. I said, it took 2 years to say I was right. And then I had all these people popping up on my thing saying, Ron, you're right. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we just barely dodged the bullet, and then they finally told everybody.
Well, that's for the listeners who don't know. A coronal mass ejection is kind of like a sunspot that blows out a lot of electromagnetic pulse towards the Earth. And we know of one strong event that happened. I think it was 1859 or something, like Carrington event.
Yeah.
And that blew out a lot of telegraph lines, but there wasn't that much electronics back then. And it's speculated that now if something similar happened, it would be just like total catastrophe.
Yeah, I mean, keeping up with it over the years, even though we say that that's the best recorded event, they're changing that now to where they're saying it could be 10 times that amount.
Okay.
We haven't even experienced yet. And plus, right now, see, we're in solar minimum.
Yeah.
And the Earth shields are down, so a smaller event can cause the same catastrophe and magnify it, too. So we're heading course, what they call the Mulder Minimum, which is your mini ice age also.
Yeah. A.R. Shaw wrote some books on that.
Oh, yeah, man. There's so much that we've never even heard of or was experienced in schools to even touch on that. So things like what you're doing right now to get the word out here is what we really need to be doing. Like, you know, like, be ready for this and not be surprised by these catastrophic events. You know, when everybody's out here going, climate change is supposed to be warming. No, we're getting freezing here, you know?
Yeah. Another thing, in 2013, have you ever written a book about grid attacks or anything?
Yeah, I did. Matter of fact, I had a really good one. Well, I like Fallen Q. I know we're not supposed to say that, but I was watching North Korea, and the WannaCry virus they put out, that the government says they put out, our government says, taking down the financial systems, et cetera. We could do other things with that. And so I wrote a plausible scheme. We call that red teaming when I was in the military, where I pretend like I'm the terrorist. And what would I do to take something down?
Yeah.
And then the other side would be the one that, like the green team said, well, how are we going to prevent that? But you got a red team at first. You got to figure out how you do it yourself, you know?
Yeah.
And so he had plausible deniability that they did it, you know, and what were we going to do to them, you know? So he took down everything. So I did that in a book.
What was the name of the book?
That one was Smoking Skillet.
Smoking Skillet. Okay.
Yeah. So I called that the military maneuver, like a smoking skillet. And then the whole thing is based upon, like, we're cooking something. So you got smoking skillet, and then you got, it's got a picture of that, and you got skillet on fire, et cetera. And then we did Apocalypse du jour, which I combined three books every once in a while. Now, I told you I got 62 books, but every once in a while I'll take three books, and I'll combine them all together into one book, new title, so the customer saves some money.
Okay.
And, you know, it's a new sale, you know, when you're trying to compete on Amazon, because Amazon will say, all right, if you're going to let, like, these Kindle books out here, people pay $10 a month and they get to read as much as they want, and I want to sell off-site, but I can't because it's an exclusive. I can put all three and put them, go wide is what we call it, and go off-site with that.
Oh, with the box set?
Yeah.
I wanted to mention Mark Goodman has a book on exactly what you talked about, cyber warfare. But what I was about to mention in 2013, and this happened right around the time of the Boston Marathon and that terrorist attack, over on the West Coast, there was a physical attack against an electrical substation. And that was April 2013. I forget the exact date.
Yeah, I've talked about that quite a bit. That's part of the training that SF soldiers get. You might have seen that in some of the news media. Not too many people talked about it, more of the military, Army Times or something like that talked about it. But that was targeted. See, that you got like oil in those transformers.
Yeah.
And you sit there with a sniper rifle or whatever. It's just a good shot, right? And you know exactly what to hit. You don't sit there and just shoot holes, and you know exactly what to hit to take down the infrastructure system. That would have took out the whole Silicon Valley.
Yep.
And see, I wrote another book on the same area over there, because it didn't do very well. Like I said, the background's emergency management. Do you know what an arc storm is, sir?
No, I don't.
Okay, it's spelled capital A, capital R, small k, capital S, storm. Arc storm is atmospheric river. The K is times a thousand storm. It actually rained before 40 days and 40 nights back in the 1800s. I think it was 1880. I don't know. I'm going off the top of my head here. In California, the governor that was elected had to come to get inaugurated in a rowboat, but the whole Los Angeles, the valley goes underwater.
Wow.
And it's going to happen again. That's already predicted. They already know. They're planning on. They've planned on so far is the economic cost, but not how to get everybody out of there. You can imagine the Crips and the Bloods and the Hells Angels riding down the same road trying to get out along with everybody else, right?
Yeah.
And here we go. Yeah. So we call that California's other big one.
Okay. Not only the Hayward Fault earthquake, but what you just mentioned there. Huh.
It's coming now, by the way, in a couple places. As we speak, Washington State's going to have a ton of rain. I think it's going on right now. I don't keep it with everything, but as far as I know, they got an atmospheric river going on right now. Not the huge one, but enough that they shut down the whole system over there, right?
Yeah.
And they're hard timing now, and they're emptying shells. That's in the news.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for all that we write about, as far as EMP and all this, let's face it, the average prepper is probably more wisely allocating their prepper resources to the, you know, like a tornado or hurricane or a flood or something, you know?
Yeah, I wish they would. I mean, I respect your opinion, but I hate the gun preppers. You know what I'm talking about? They get them 1,000 rounds of 223 because I ask them, I say, are you going to war? Are you going hunting? Because what are you going to hunt with that 223? You can't get a squirrel and, you know, rabbits and all this and that. I got two kids I watch, you know, 13, 14-year-olds walk across a cow pasture every day with a BB gun or a pellet gun. They can feed themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
You got a battle rifle. What are you going to do? You're only preparing to protect what you got from your neighbor, and then when you run out of food, everybody got guns. You're going to be shooting at each other, and you don't have the skills and the talents you need to truly survive.
Yeah, like an AR-15, which is fun to shoot, but I don't think there'd be much left of a like a squirrel or a rabbit.
No, I mean, so you can't feed yourself with it. So where do you put your money into? People are going to debt on that. You go down there and buy you a Daisy 880 old style BB pellet gun slash, right?
Okay.
You get a whole setup, you know, $50 to $75, depending on where you bought it. And you put everything that for $100, that's the only thing I can think of that you can feed you and your family for a year with.
Yep.
If all I had was $100 to face the apocalypse with, that's what I would tell you to do.
Okay.
That's what I write about. That's what I put in that book that we're talking about, Old Farts Guide Survival. Because you can live in your backyard with that. Think about this. Get you one of them soot box, S-U-E-T. I know my weird southern accent is going to mess with people's minds out here, or a bunch of these. You can attract birds. Birds are everywhere. You see birds every morning. All right? Get you 25 pounds of rice and a BB gun. And learn how to eat Chinese, a little bit of meat, a lot of rice. Eat the backyard with that. Now, once everybody else, I'm going to bug out of it, you're going to die.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And they spent 10 times more not spending here. So I do common sense survival in my books.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to mention the Old Fart Survival Guide that I bought, the paperback version, that I think there's a handful of nonfiction prepper books that I think every prepper should consider having in their library. And this is one of them. The one thing I like is that there are a lot of photos and drawings throughout this book. And this is something I did with my book, Dirt Cheap Valuable Prepping and Dirt Cheap Valuable Survival Retreat, because you can learn a lot just by seeing a photo. And there are a lot of photos in here. And it's kind of difficult to do when you're publishing a book, because every once in a while, especially with ebooks, it messes things up. But for the paperback book, it's really helpful, I think.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. We've talked briefly before the interview a bit about trapping and snaring and whatnot.
Yes.
I think that's a skill everybody needs. And you also want me to touch on some things that not a lot of people think about. So for your listeners, I want to tell you how you can spend a dollar.
Okay.
To feed yourself the rest of your life. How about that one?
Okay.
You remember those buy any tool, $2, $3, $1, whatever, you know, I don't keep up with them. You know, it's a big box of tools.
Okay, yeah.
When you go in some of these places, you seen those?
Yes, like Dollar General.
Yeah, there you go. You're going to get you a pair of wire strippers because, look, when the grid goes down, every single plug in your house don't work anymore, does it?
That's right.
And you don't have any money to buy a whole bunch of modern snares, but you got all the snare wire you need right there.
Okay.
And if you got a pair of that wire strippers, instead of having to try to do it with a knife, which is a real pain in the ass, take that dollar pair of wire strippers, you're in business.
And you can use a snare that will catch, you know, animals that you can eat.
Yeah, see, the thing about it is a lot of people go, oh, you got to get all comfy. All they think about is strangle and dangle, you know, like you're going to hang something out of a tree. See, animals, when they walk through the woods, they're used to vines and whatnot, and they just kind of push their way through it. If you got just a snare, I mean, even if it's a relaxing snare without a modern snare lock on, you got that sucker. When you come down there, be ready to hit it with a stick or something because it's alive, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But you got them. But if you had that pair of dollar wire strippers that should hit the fan tomorrow, and you got your whole house full of electrical cords, and you can put that out, excuse me, cats, dogs, you know, whatever comes by. There's more game inside of a city than there is out in the woods, by the way, because it's easier for them to live over here, possums, et cetera. You got your chance, and then it's going to hunt 24-7 for you. You can live in your backyard with that knowledge. You can go anywhere if you want to bug out, but try to do it without one. houses that have plenty of copper wire and whatnot. You just load it up the way you want to on the size of game you're going after.
Okay. That's interesting that you're saying that there might be more edible animals in the city than out.
There is. Always. Okay. You can find out 10 million game reports out there because, see, animals come in, they want it easy. We got trash. We got, these are places for them to hide, live in. So there's more animals in the city living that you can eat than there are in the country.
Okay.
You get a couple of squirrels per acre out there, but you go to a park and get in the trees full of them, right?
Yeah.
It works the same way. So you don't necessarily want to be thinking about bugging out because where all the food's at is here. Now, the greatest equalizer of any bug out, and then people talking about cities and whatnot, and I'm like, you don't want to necessarily be the first one to run out of there. You want to leave there and eat leftover with stuff because as soon as the water's shut off, you got 3 days, right?
Yeah.
And they're going to head for the nearest river, lake, or whatever to get water.
Okay.
That means everybody's gone, but you were smart. You stored water. You know how to collect water. You know how to purify or do whatever. You can stay with all those resources, and you're not out in a tent in the middle of the woods with no game.
That's interesting. I'm just looking at, it's chapter 9 in your book, Basic Survival Snaring and Substance Trapping 101. This is a great chapter. It looks like you can use bungee cords, too. And you've got a whole group.
I don't know about bungee cord, but, you know.
Okay, well, this looks really helpful. And several drawings and photos here.
Yeah, I mean, I teach you the basics. I'll teach you in there also a whole chapter on catching birds in your backyard. Man, who the hell puts their time in that? But like I was saying, if you're smart, you got this big block of rice. You went down to Sam's Wholesale. You got 25 pounds of rice for $10, right?
Yep.
Whatever's in your kitchen for spices, whatever. You get these itty-bitty birds. Here's one of my sayings I also tell you. If you don't know how to catch a bird, you're reduced to eating what the bird eats, and that's insects and worms, and I don't plan on eating those.
Same here.
So learn how to catch a bird, you won't be a good prepper.
Okay, yeah, that's chapter 10. That's good information, it looks like. Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks. I wanted to ask you, you know, this book, by the way, if your muscles start to atrophy, you can use it to weightlift, by the way.
That is 550 pages of here we go.
Yeah, that's good. It's good.
That ain't everything I know, but it's everything I figured you need at the moment. But see, yeah. I'll tell you one thing about all my books, even though that's 550 pages, in all my books, there's at least one thing that's not in that book. Teach you how to survive. And it should be a lot more than that. And in all those 60 books, I never repeat a trick.
You and I had talked about the possibility of a bug-out boat. What can you tell our listeners about that?
Well, you figure it this way. Say you're in a big city, especially. All civilization is built around waterways, mostly. You know, the roads are going to be clogged, right? How about if you get on the boat to bug out of the city instead of going through all that, or you're out of gas or whatever? One, you got your water source up underneath you, and the water's heavy. You don't have to carry that. It's your food source. There's fish. You can carry more weight on the boat than you possibly carry on your back. You can drift down a river at dawn, and you'll see deer coming to get their morning drink of water or whatever. You can have a shot at them instead of sitting in a deer stand. It just makes perfect good sense.
Yeah, especially if you're in one of the cities along the Intercoastal Waterway. That's a good,
yeah,
good
mean,
way
a
to transport.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, I wrote, I think I got five out here right now. Well, I wrote a big book called The Bug Out Boat. That was the coolest boat I ever got in my life. On the cover of that thing, Canada makes a boat called a tetrapod. And it looks like an ammo carrier for a trailer. But what it is, it's a giant boat that folds in half. It's a trailer, so I can store all my camp equipment and everything else. And then when I get where I'm going, I unfold it. And it's a boat. And okay. I figured out how to run that thing solar. And then in the book, I managed to get it all the way from Atlanta down to Florida, and we're running on solar power with a trolling motor.
What was the name of that book again?
Bug Out Boat Survival.
Okay. Well, that's good.
And I got kayaks. One of my sponsors is Seagull. I got a lot of inflatable boats, and they make the best inflatable boat out here. I'll tell you how strong that. A lot of people are scared of an inflatable boat, but I got videos of taking a claw hammer with the claw and beating on one, you know, like 10, 14 times full strength, and you can't pop a hole in the thing.
Well, that's good to know.
They really make them out some good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm expanding that theme. We're going down here to my Spectre Island event. Talked to a great company today called actually.
Okay. Yeah.
But this stuff is like fruit leather, right? And it doesn't stink on your hands like a rigger catfish bait does.
Yeah.
It releases all the scent trails in the water, and you can catch 6-7 fish off the same little piece of stuff. And instead of, you know, like hide the worm and do all this, now you just hook the stuff on there and catch fish. It's cool as hell. You can look it up on YouTube, because it's not just me saying it. There's a lot of people showing you how easy it is to use this stuff. When you go, you know, everybody got these little cheap survival fishing kits. If you don't know what to do with that, nobody has ever got bait. I'm like, man, carry some bait with you. Go get that marshmallow bait can or do something. So this is the one we're going towards right now. And I'm like, oh, yeah, put that stuff in there. So when you get down to the thing you want to go raise, set, go fishing, you're ready. You're not out there digging around the dirt or trying to chase a grasshopper or something, you know?
All right, that's chapter 21 in this book I'm looking at, Survival Fishing 101.
That's the best trick I can teach anybody. Do you see the gorge in there? The one photo you're going to see in there is a movie that I don't know if I put it in there or not. I write for prepper.org also, but they put that in there. I didn't want to steal the picture because I didn't have permission for a picture. Anyway, remember when the soccer team went down in the Andes a while back?
Yep.
And they ended up eating each other, and that was like cannibalism in the New World because they didn't have any survival skills. They're right next to a stream full of salmon and trout. They got a whole plane they could salvage off of. Nobody knew how to do that.
Yeah.
And so my one trick that I tell you, I say it down here in the South, I said, you grew up around sidewalks. You know, we used to take popsicle sticks and sharpen them.
Yeah.
On the sidewalk. See, half my people down here grew up around dirt roads, so you have to excuse me, you know.
That's right.
They didn't have that experience. But you find your rock and a stick. You sharpen that thing on both ends, tie your line in the middle, stuff that thing down a grasshopper or whatever. Fish walls that go sideways in its throat, you caught a fish on a twig.
Yeah.
That's the greatest thing that ever happened. With that knowledge that I'm trying to teach you, you go out in the woods in your underwear, because you'd have some string, you go naked, but I'm just saying so you have some string, and you can live next to water anywhere. So that's about the best thing I could teach anybody for a survival skill. That's what you ought to pass on to your kids. No. Otherwise, you'd be like that whole plane load of everybody, they're thinking about eating each other, you know?
Yeah,
not thinking they did.
Yeah. It's occurred to me that there's some people on eBay who sell belts that are just woven together paracord. And something like that would come in really handy if you wanted to go fishing. And here's something I noticed from your book. This is in chapter 21, page 381. You can use an old beer can and make the flip top thing into a hook that you can use to go fishing. I think that's...
Oh, yeah. What the South American beer companies put the directions on the back of that.
Oh, that's what this is. Okay.
Yeah, they put the directions on the back of their can on how to make one, because they made a specialized top, not just a regular one.
Okay.
But the regular ones work fine.
Yeah, the photo that I'm looking at looks kind of like the regular American flip top, just that you need to kind of cut into one half of it and then pull it out.
A pair of side cutters and clip, and that's it, yeah. I mean, you're not going to spend hours and hours trying to carve fish hooks. Like I said, if you go to any history museum, you'll see fish gorges, G-R-G-E, that Native Americans have been using for years. And all it is, it's like, remember the buttons on the coat that look like they're wood and they're kind of like pointy on each end?
Yep.
That's a fish gorge. You just scale it to the size of the fish that you want to make a catch with.
Yeah, there's some talk about that here on the pages in that chapter. That's pretty handy.
That way you're not spending all this time. You can throw three lines out by the time you make one fish. If you don't have to hook them. And it's a different way of fishing. But you got to imagine things swallowing that thing. And they did it. And look at the size of a fish. And they got fish sense, okay?
Yeah.
It is swallow stuff.
Yep. Huh. Okay. Well, that's good to see. How about water purification, especially when your water is only salt water? What can you tell us about that?
That's my huge thing. I'm getting old over here, and I tell the girlfriend, I'm like, you know, shit is to fan. I'm going to stay down here. I mean, I can last here for a year or so, what I got, but I'm going to Florida.
Okay.
Because I want seafood, you know?
Yeah.
And I know the areas that I'm going to is mostly tourists, et cetera. Everybody's going to be moving out of there because nobody knows how easy it is to convert salt water into fresh water.
Okay.
All right, so you basically, on doing that, I will tell you this way. Get you two salad bowls. There's some saran wrap. All right?
Okay.
one side, the other, put saran wrap over the top of it after you put the water on the side of the smaller bowl in the middle. So what will happen, it'll heat up in the sun. You got to put a rock on the top of the saran wrap so it drips into the center bowl just as a weight.
Okay.
And you have now converted salt into fresh water. That's a solar still, but there's a lot, thousand ways of doing that. But back to the water where it's going to evacuate an area, right?
Yeah.
If you can't get water, you got to leave. You got to leave or die, right?
Yeah.
So when I'm evaluating how I'm going to live or not live in an area, I want to know how many people are there, for one thing. I want to know what their mentality is. I want to know what's going on. And also tell people, don't get caught going to the water hole because you know the predators are going to be there, right?
Yep.
I mean, if everybody's going to leave town, go to the nearest water thing, you're going to have everybody there, and you're in trouble. You know?
Yeah.
The idea is to avoid it, but that's going to be the great migration. That's how shit hit the fan actually works. I try to teach people that.
Well, I'm just seeing a couple of photos in your book, page 258, on what you just described, saran wrap and a salad bowl and a smaller bowl inside it. And I guess you just leave it out in the sun. And you come back and you've got some fresh water.
Yeah, because basically what it does is, you know, like steam rises. You can look at it that way. You can do it, cook steam, you can distill. You know, there's a whole bunch of ways to do it. That's just the easiest way I know that. See, I tell everybody, I said, don't be learning how to split flints into arrowheads and crap like that. There's so much stuff that just lays on the side of the road in modern day society that you could use if you know what it is.
Yeah, yep. And it's not only salt water, but any kind of water that you wouldn't feel good drinking directly, you can use this to purify it.
Yeah, you can put a below ground still, which you're familiar with, et cetera. We use those in deserts. You know, you try to get vegetation. If you can't find it, if not, you can pee on the side of the thing. It doesn't matter.
Yep.
You're going to have 100% distilled pure water.
Yeah.
Like in that first book I was studying in Prepper's Road March, I was saying, what's in every suit? They got these garbage cans in the office, you know, with them clear plastic bags in there, in all the office buildings, right?
Yeah.
A town, a city, is a desert. So you find one of those bags, you can stick that over tree branches to make sure it's not a poisonous bush or whatever. I mean, it's kind of hard not to get in trouble about that, but pretty much everything I know, you know, is fine. Just put it over there. It's called tree transpiration still. It'll sweat water out of the leaves in the corner of the bag. You can actually get water.
Yeah.
That's what my guy had to do to get out of town. You're walking through town. You're walking the main streets of the city. You got no water, right?
But if you've got a tree.
And one of the bags that you can easily find in an office building, you're good to go.
It says clear plastic bag.
Yeah, you just stick it over the branch sticking out, right?
Yep.
With the leaves. And let it sit in the sun. It'll drip water in the corner of the bag. You don't have to make you a hole to get your water out, right?
Yeah.
Or pour it off or do whatever you want. It's like, I cover all that. But I'm just telling you that that's how you got water when nobody else does.
Yeah.
Remember I was saying, you stay in the city until everybody else is out dead and dying and they're killing each other at the water hole, right?
That's good to know. I always think of contractor bags as bags to keep for survival. But these clear bags would be good exactly for that reason, to bring water out of a tree.
A little bit wet, better, that's all.
Yeah, that's page 247. And then I guess maybe like a paracord to tie it on.
You can just use the bag to tie itself, right?
Yeah, well, that's a pretty unheard of prep. One of your chapters here, you talk about guns, especially the AR-7, which got my attention because that's a .22 rifle that I really like.
Tried to do this same gun before that was carried by the Air Force survival gun. They messed it up that it was a Jam-O-Matic. Henry got that thing refined. I've never had a hang up or nothing ever. I've shot thousands of rounds off of them, just brand new or old or whatever. Beautiful gun. You can shoot, like we're saying, the difference between you and the AR folks, your squirrels, your rabbits, possums. Records. You get trouble down here, Alabama, deer poachers use .22s.
Okay.
You can get a headshot on one. That's a great rifle. It's inexpensive.
Mm-hmm.
You can get a brick rounds. I mean, you carry, you know, 100 rounds of $12. Now try 100 rounds of shotgun.
Right. Well, this all dismantles and fits in the stock of the gun. And I think the reason why the Air Force bought a lot of them is because I think it'll float. I've never tested that myself, but...
Well, I'll tell you, they float, but it'd be like semi-submerged. You leave it out there for a long time, so it's not waterproof. Okay. I know that from throwing one in there just to find out, right?
Okay.
It will float for a while. Now, imagine yourself in New Orleans, right?
Right.
Flooded. You're walking around in knee-deep water. I tell that to people, too. Shit. Try to hump a damn bug-out bag through that shit. Nobody thinks of that stuff, right?
Yep.
It's a mess, but I was down there. I was seeing what everybody's toting with them, you know?
Yeah. Plus, but there's the gun, cool factor.
That gun will float, and if you dropped it off your kayak or what, no, it'll float. It'll float even when it's assembled, right?
Yeah.
But it's not totally waterproof, you know? You're going to have to dry it out a little bit, but it's not going to the bottom of the lake, you know, put it that way.
Plus, I think James Bond used this gun or something just like it in From Russia with Love.
Oh, yeah. Those things are accurate, man. That's a tech driver. Pretty neat. They got a dual sight on them. A lot of people go, well, it's not an old complicated machine sight, because all it is a piece of sheet metal with two different size holes on it. But I've never had any problem hitting what I was shooting at. Yeah. I mean, within reason. I mean, we're talking about squirrel hunting distance, you know?
Yep.
35 yards, yeah. All day long, I could put it, you know, right in the center of a bullseye.
Yeah.
You hit further than that. But you're not supposed to be shooting further than that. And the one thing I tell everybody what to load on, see, that's the problem with everybody, too. They want the biggest, baddest bullet. There's no miracle bullets out here. And Henry will tell you, too, now those super hypersonic loads, you can use Stingers, CCI Stingers. That's as powerful as you want to get on that thing.
You're talking about the 22 bullets.
On that,
yeah.
Right? Stingers are beautiful. Regular long rifles are fine, but if you want something bad, but don't put them hypersonics in there, you're going to screw up your gun.
Okay. Well, it occurred to me that the 22 long rifle, I'm not sure if Stinger is one of them, but after every one of these major horrible shootouts, you know, school shootings or whatever, where there would be a run on ammo at the local store because everybody's worried that everything's going to start getting banned. It seems like there's always been a bunch of 22 ammo still left behind.
Well, you're much younger. So we had a dearth. You could not get 22 for a long time because all the preppers were buying it and they weren't making it, you know, for a while.
Okay.
And we were like going crazy. I mean, we used to buy, you know, a brick for $6 and then you couldn't even find them. It went up like $40.
Okay.
It's crazy. The prices are down now. Yeah, no, 22. A brick is 500 rounds. They run about $18 now.
Yeah, they're still pretty cheap.
Yeah, I mean, but you got 500 rounds. You can put a brick in your backpack, man. You're good to go.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll tell you what, you know, you talk about marauders or whatever.
Yeah.
You won't get shot with nothing in the apocalypse. One thing, you won't die because you lack of medical care. But nobody knows what you're shooting down with, and it's plenty. Get out there and get good with it. When you got cheap ammo, you got plenty of range time you could go play with, too.
Yeah. You're definitely not feeling the financial guilt after shooting a whole bunch of 22s like you do with 45s or something.
Yeah, I mean, but you got a chance to get accurate with it, get good with it. Hey, I got kids down here can bust an aspirin with a Daisy 880.
Okay.
You get with 22, right? And whatever you shoot, I mean, it's always accuracy, but you can sit there and pop caps and play around with the thing, and it's fun. It doesn't disturb the neighbors real bad or whatever. You can only shoot long rifles in that particular gun you talk about. Henry gave me a lever action, you know, that I can shoot the .22 shorts, and that's what we used to do when I was a kid, because that shit only cost 50 cents a damn box versus a dollar box, you know?
Yeah.
But .22 short. That gun I'm talking about, you get them in 10-round versions in the carbine and 16 rounds in the regular rifle. That's my apocalypse. That's my squirrel hunting gun. That's okay. What I carry every day for my squirrel hunting gun.
The carbine?
Oh, yeah. It's a lever action, you know, with dovetail sights. Accurate. But I can shoot shorts in that thing, and it's about as loud as a Silence BB gun.
Okay, well, that's something else I like about 22s. You know, for most... every gun out there, you got to have ear protection when you shoot it. And I shot a .22 revolver a few months ago, and my ears were ringing a little bit, but it's nothing like, you know, AR-15 or AK-47. Those things are really loud. But a 22 is okay. I mean, you can shoot like this AR-7. I was shooting it just the other day without any ear protection. I don't feel like my ears were hurting after that.
No, I mean, the only downside on that gun at all that I've ever heard of anybody complain about is that the stock is like overbuilt so it can float. It's a little fat for a smaller person, smaller girlfriend or a kid, but they can handle it just fine. You just got to compensate. That's the only thing I've ever heard against things. That finish that they put on there, it doesn't rust, by the way. And I told them, I mean, it ran like hell on me in the middle of the woods and carried my home and hung it upside down and let it dry by on its own and shot it the next day and left it for a month and then it rusted.
Oh, that's good to know. Okay.
I mean, there's a great coating on that barrel that they have.
At the beginning of your book, you've got several lists of what you would put into a survival kit. And there's some photos here, too. And I noticed you've got some .22 ammo, but a whole bunch of other stuff.
Well, Henry got the survival kit. Their survival kit, they sell one. I don't advocate pre-made survival kits very often, but that's one I say because my girlfriend, when we got into prep a little bit, you put everything you can think of in the damn bag weighs too much, right?
Right.
You learn how to do everything in that one little box, and you're going to be just fine. And then I just add the ammo to it.
Yep. Yeah, it looks like there's a lot of useful stuff, but not anything superfluous, you know. You got the multi-tool, you got a whistle, compass, you can use this.
Well, they got the surgical tubing, so like if you're in the desert and you made a ground still, you got like a soup can at the bottom of the thing. Instead of opening the thing, breaking the circulation of it, you can just sip water out of the can instead of taking the still apart to get your water. So that one piece of thought out means a real military survival expert got a hold of it.
Okay.
Plus, if you had to, you could turn that circle tubing into a slingshot.
Yep. And here's something you can use some of this for fishing. And you just connect it to the end of a tree, it looks like.
Yeah, but obviously I would add bait to it, man. Like I was talking about. So you go down there and you spend a couple of dollars at Walmart and have bait, you know, so you're ready to go. That's what everybody doesn't figure out. Like, you know, they'd rather carry a damn entrenching tool to buy and dig up worms. I tell you what, I can't dig up worms anytime I want to, and I know what I'm doing.
Yeah, only when it's raining do I come across any. Well,
they want to have everything stacked the best direction you can. So you go buy one of them fish things. All they are is like mini marshmallows with fish attracting on them.
Okay, that's what this is. It's called power bait, right?
There you go.
Page 17.
Now you're ready to go. See, now you got your bait with you.
Yep.
That's a huge game changer.
And with the multi-tool, you can fix it, gut it, and then with the rest of the stuff in this box here, you can cook it. Looks pretty good.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I wrote the Rural Ranger back in 2003. I was telling everybody how to use the old H-rigs that we used when I was in the Army. And they got a butt pack on them. I throw that in there with my poncho and a survival blanket. I'm good to go. You know, I got everything I need back there. And then you got to be able, we were talking about that earlier, you know, to me, the poncho is the best survival tool you got. And you always want to have ready access to it. Back in the day, we used to blouse our boots. Blousing boots is making look up at the top of it, but they had what they call blousing rubbers on there. But we'd hang the poncho over the back of our belt. Put some blousing rubbers on, so they start pouring down rain. You just reach back, pull the thing out, put the thing on, you're good to go. You keep on walking. You ain't digging your pack, you ain't doing this and that, right?
Yep.
So I got a whole bunch of experience off of doing that kind of stuff that like, oh, this makes sense because of this, that thing that people don't think about. You know, you can have everything, but if you can't get to it or you don't know how to use it, you know?
Right, exactly. You need to do some trial runs. Now, the poncho I talked about in one of my books that not only can you use it for rain, but as a tent. And you and I were talking earlier about in the South, because of all the bug issues there, a poncho can keep you from being eaten up by bugs.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'll tell you what, you want to lay down at night. You know, it's like you come off a 5-10 mile road march, whatever. You're going to lay down, you're going to go to sleep, wrap up in it, lay down. You're not going to be all dirty. Because, you know, hygiene is, it's hard enough to take a bath or something out in the woods, right?
Yeah.
But you also don't want what we call red bugs or ticks or whatever getting on you.
Yeah.
low, put it in a container, you have more surface area to collect rain. You can fill up pots and pans quicker with rainwater for your drinking purposes.
Yeah, okay.
That's a use for it. I come up with 80 of the damn things. I call it playing the game. My girlfriend hates it when I do. I come on with another one, right? And I have to think of it. I come up with 80 uses of a poncho. I bet most people can't come up with 12, you know?
12 uses for a poncho. Yeah, the only drawback I've ever, well, theorized, I've never seen it happen, but the poncho, a lot of times they have strings hanging down. So be careful if you're working on an engine or something. You know, that might get wrapped in there. But otherwise, yeah, you're right. Ponchos, you can use them for a whole bunch of different things.
Yeah, I'll tell you, they sent me to Montana. I mentioned this one to you. I'm from Alabama. I'm cold. I'm freezing myself to death. What the hell is kind of cold as this, you know? And I'm on guard duty. And this old sergeant taught me this trick. You take one of them tea candles.
Yeah.
And you can squat down on the ground with that poncho on and put that tea candle up underneath you. That heat comes off that tea candle up underneath your poncho.
Yeah.
And you're going to stay warm on guard duty.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like the difference between night and day.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, thanks for spending so much time with us here today. Is there a website our listeners can get a hold of you or YouTube channel or anything?
Yeah, I mean, I got the website. Easiest thing to do in there is just Google Ron Foster author or Ron Foster prepper, and you're going to see a bazillion videos and links and everything else on there. And then I'm on Amazon. I got plenty of books out here. Back in the day when I basically started this, there was only three of us doing this, you know, on prepper fiction genre. So I've been around a long while, and my stuff's out there. I'm easy to find. And if you want to talk to me on Twitter, I'm a solo prepper on Twitter, on Facebook, anything. I always have time for my readers. I answer any questions. Feel free to contact me at any time.
Okay, will do. Well, thanks again for joining us here at the Survival Emotion Podcast, and all the best to you. And hopefully we can refer a lot of people to your books that sound like they're really very informative.
And anybody wants to come down there and meet us on Specter Island, Alabama, hey, we'll give you good fishing, good camping, and might even get some southern barbecue.
Sounds good. That's worth the trip right there. Thanks again, Ron.
All the best. Thank you.
Okay, so there you have it. That was my interview with prepper author Ron Foster about unusual preps, especially his latest book, which I can't say enough good things about, Old Farts Survival Guide. And as long as that interview was, it might be worth listening to a second time, because there was a lot that we discussed in that interview that is not only unusual, but you kind of have to hear him make the case. Like, for example, that was the first time I've ever heard anybody try to make the case that after a societal collapse, it might be a good idea just to stay in town instead of joining everybody else who might be trying to leave town at the time. I'm not sure if I'm fully convinced, honestly, but I don't think I've ever heard the argument made that if there's a total societal collapse, it might be a good idea just to stay put in the town where you live. So that was interesting. So definitely a lot of discussion of unusual preps there with author Ron Foster. And I want to thank Ron Foster for joining me. All right, I want to change gears a little bit here and announce my latest book that I've been working on. It's a fictional book. It's called EMP NYC, and it will be out soon. This is a sequel to my last fictional book, EMP, The End of the Grid as We Know It, which came out a couple years ago. So it's been a little over 2 years in the making. It seems like I've been wanting it to come out long ago, but I've had personal issues that have gotten in the way and have distracted me big time. But I'm happy to say that this book, EMP NYC, will probably be out. Well, I'll put it this way. It's a very high likelihood that the book will be released at the end of March. So be watching for that. EMP NYC, as in New York City. It is now registered on Amazon, has a ISBN number. And when it gets released at the end of March, it will be exclusive on Amazon. And that means it will be available to people on Kindle Unlimited First, it will be published as a Kindle book version, and then it will be published, who knows, days, weeks, months, probably weeks later as a paperback version. And then after that, there will be an audio version available. This book, EMP NYC, will be more of a literary book, and it will be less of an obviously instructive prepper book than the first EMP book was. If you might remember that first EMP book, I think it was chapter 5, just as an example, the protagonist, Jim, took off his backpack. And then I spend a couple of paragraphs going through what he had in that backpack. That's something that's just kind of obviously a teachable prepper aspect of that book. There will be a lot of teachable prepper issues in this next book, but it will be a little bit more disguised, you know. Anyway, I'd like to say this. It will be more literary, and there will be more focus on the story instead of just teaching prepper issues. There's a lot going on in this book, EMP NYC. The scenes will be all over. I wrote down what's going on in this book. It starts off with a kidnapping outside of Tokyo. It goes on to, there's a conference call with the president's chief of staff, the CIA director, and several other government officials regarding Iran being caught enriching uranium and making very small nuclear bombs. There will be a scene on a cruise ship. There will be many landmarks in New York City described in the book. There will be an appearance by the Israeli intelligence agency named Mossad. And as the book progresses, Mossad at first is not on the same side as the protagonist in this book. Eventually, they become united on the same side. There will also be a wedding in Tennessee. There will also be an airplane ride. There will also be a small nuclear bomb taken apart and armed with a detonator. There will be sarin gas attacks. There will be phosgene gas attacks. There will be NYU students who are part of the Mossad. There will be scenes at Washington Square, nearby NYU in New York City, including there will be a scene inside the Marble Arch at Washington Square. There will be a riot in Central Park. There will be suicides from tall buildings, including the Empire State Building. There will be scuba diving inside the New York City subway system, and on and on and on and on. This book has a lot that's going on, including gun nuts being glorified, which I enjoy doing that in books. So there will also be several references to movies, some of them not so hidden, but some of them a little bit more subtle. So there's a lot that's going on in this book, EMP NYC. If you want to be notified of the release of this book, what you can do is go to Amazon, click on the link for author Cal Wilson, and then click on that yellow tab to follow author Cal Wilson on Amazon. Or you can sign up for email notices at the Survival in Motion podcast. That's what's going on with this book. Like I said, it's going to be called EMP NYC, and it will be released at the end of March. And I'm looking forward to that. I've spent a lot of time. I've enjoyed writing this book, and I'm really looking forward to the reception of this book. It's a great book, I think. So anyway, be watching for the release of that book. I hope you found today's episode of the Survival in Motion podcast to be informative and educational. I hear the music. That means our time is up. Thank you for joining me. God bless.